Umi, I've got her, I repeat, firm. Connor nods, slowly, and returns to his seat. Chapter 8. I sit with Kaida in my lap, and she gives me a beautiful, snotty kiss. Sorry, Minami wipes my cheek. We're working on her penchant for sharing bodily fluids. You know everyone here, right? Minami asks. Yep. Despite my better judgment, my eyes are already flying to Connor, who has fallen in conversation with Nyota and Avery and... Actually, not the blonde. Oh, right. Tamarin. You're going to adore her. She's lovely. Irish. I can't wait for you to hear her and Hark talk to each other. Plates stuffed with bread, eggplant rolls, and sun-dried tomatoes are deposited in front of us. Oh my god, this looks amazing. Everyone laughs, eats, sips from constantly refilled glasses. I focus on cajoling Kaida into not playing with the pepper shaker and accept a few bites of shredded chicken. Take a deep breath. Inhale the burning scent of citronella and land a blueberry jet plane inside a very eager mouth. My eyes, though, keep straying to Tamarin. Her long face, wide lips, fair complexion. There's something about the way her features come together that takes my breath away. This is someone who could easily make money off her looks. She laughs at the chatter buzzing around her and plucks a roll from Connor's plate. Easy. Intimate.
He said what?
Nyota is asking from the other side of the table. I think COB reminded him of the inevitability of death. Connor shakes his head.
Avery, if you bring this up at the next board meeting, I will rename Harkness after you.
He's actually going to go through with it, Tamarin says. Her eyes catch me staring, and she grins. Kind. I flush, ferociously, am relieved when someone says,
So Maya, I hear we might be colleagues.
I turn to the man sitting at my right. Oh my god, Paul?
Yep, that's me.
We maneuver into an awkward hug above Kaida's head. How long has it been?
A while. I think since that time...
Do not mention the mac and cheese.
You puked mac and cheese all over me.
That's definitely not true. We've met at least twice since, and on both occasions, you reminded me of that incident.
Touché.
Behind wire-rimmed glasses, light blue eyes squeeze into a smile. That's when I parse his words. Wait, what do you mean we'll be working together?
You're coming to Sanchez, right? Their semiconductors are state-of-the-art. You'll love it there.
He's talking about the California company that's pioneering new chip technology and offering me a, frankly, unprincipled amount of money to go work for them. How do you know that?
I've been doing R&D for them for the last couple of months, and your name cropped up a lot. Once Eli told the C-suite that you might be going into industry, they went hard to recruit you. Congrats on that Young Researcher medal, by the way.
I tilt my head. You know a lot about my life.
That's because I constantly brag about you,
Eli says from a few seats down.
And no, I will not stop bringing up your accomplishments, so don't ask.
I think Eli may be living his mad scientist dreams vicariously through you, Minami whispers. Her smile is indulgent. But my stomach locks up. I set down my fork. Actually, I tell Paul, I haven't accepted Sanchez's offer yet. I'm undecided between that and...
Yeah, the MIT position, right?
Paul nods.
I heard that it comes with a Fermilab project.
I'd ask how you know, but... I glance at Eli, who has moved on from the conversation and is whispering something in Rue's ear that has her laughing.
Whenever I see Eli, he spends approximately 20 minutes catching me up on how amazing you are. That's before hello.
And as he speaks, all you can picture is cheddar orange puke in your lap.
Always.
His eyes roam my face, what little he can see of the yellow halter romper I put on for dinner.
You look different from before, I mean.
I laugh. Because I'm not currently eating mac and cheese?
No. Because...
His gaze dips down to my collarbones, fleeting, bounces back to my eyes. You look the same, I say. Paul has always been cute. Wavy, light hair, deep dimples. He's about 4 years older than me. At 12, I was doomed to develop a crush on him, and while he must have noticed how I'd blush and disappear into my room the second he set foot in our house, he kindly pretended not to.
So?
He clears his throat.
Have you made a decision yet? Industry or academia?
Not yet. No.
You're leaning toward...
I bite my lower lip. What little I ate churns in my stomach. Perennially underfunded ivory tower, or big business that prioritizes monetary gains over scientific curiosity. When I figure it out, you'll be the first to know. And before Paul can utter the "but" forming on his lips, I turn to the person across from him. Hey, Axel, I tell Paul's brother.
Hi, kid.
He booms, just a little too loud. Axel used to play hockey with Eli in college, and later went on to the NHL, which made him incredibly popular among my high school classmates, to whom I should never have revealed my connection to him. I can't deny that he's attractive, but he was always too much of a protein shake. Would you like me to lift something heavy for you, jock, to truly appeal to me? Supposedly, he and Eli used to party hard. Supposedly, Axel never stopped. Do you still play in, was it Philadelphia? It's as if I asked to borrow his kitten's entrails for my soup.
Bro.
He shakes his head, crestfallen. He turns to Tisha to ask her to pass the olive oil.
Impressive.
Paul whispers at me. I blink. What just happened?
You destroyed my plus one's peace of mind in 3 words, Maya.
Oh, shit.
He's with the Pittsburgh Penguins, Philly's rivals.
He shakes his head, reproachful.
Do you not follow the ins and outs of the Eastern Conference?
I don't really believe in the concept of team sports. Does that absolve me?
I don't know. Let's ask Axel.
We regard each other for a few seconds, amused, until Kaida grasps a piece of cantaloupe too big for her mouth. Are you really here as your brother's plus one? I mean, no way a Pittsburgh Penguin would be snatched up, I say, raising my voice. Either Axel doesn't hear me, or he's not ready to forgive.
Unfortunately, this Pittsburgh Penguin doesn't really have the attention span to...
Date?
Hold a conversation, I was gonna say. As for me, my antibiotic-resistant toenail fungus doesn't play to my advantage. What about you?
When I was a kid, I once got a rash on my wrist, but...
I meant, are you here alone?
Oh, I laugh. Yeah. His smile widens. I wait for a flutter of something to flap its wings in my stomach, a skipped heartbeat, a glimmer of interest. In vain. It's been a recurring problem. My gaze strays to Connor, who briefly excused himself to take a call by the balustrade. He stares past the cliff, half-cloaked in shadow. Maybe it's time you did something to solve this problem, Maya. After all, it's nice talking to Paul. Easy. By the time the first course arrives, penne with cream sauce and chunks of salmon, I know everything about his mechanical arm project, and he's called me a childish brat exactly 0 times. We are, I think, the odd men out. The ones who don't have a horse in the race when a table-wide fight over a trade deal breaks out. Nyota and Connor leading opposite sides, with the argumentative relish of people who love disagreeing about their circumscribed interests. He laughs several times. Connor, that is. Often in response to something Avery said. Once or twice after talking, hushed, with Tamron. Each time, my stomach politely asks me if it could keel over. No, I say flatly, in this body, we endure. Before dessert, a smiling, statuesque woman whose English vocabulary seems to consist of the words gut and eat steps out from the house. Lucrezia, the housekeeper, makes a round of the table to both vigorously squeeze everyone's hand and to shake her head in disappointment at those of us who didn't polish their plates. Kaida begins to fidget, and with Minami's permission, I let her lead me back to her favorite jasmine shrub. It's nice, the short respite from the constant chatter. Are you taking me on an adventure, princess? I smile at the faint stumble of her little steps, the way she turns back to make sure that I'm keeping up. Her brown eyes widen, take in all the wonders of the world, reach for the strings of overhead lights that flood the garden with amber hues. Those two are so cute. I overhear an unknown Irish voice say behind me. Tamron, I think. Maya's so good with kids, Avery agrees. Connor's voice is a low rumble.
She was one most recently.
My stomach asks if self-implosion is still off the table.
Kind of endearing. That the person Maya has the most in common with is not quite 2-year-old.
Diego says. Maybe we should set up a kids' table for the under 30, Tisha muses. Will you stop trying to kick off an intergenerational war? Nyota asks. With you? Never. I take a deep breath. Let the rest of the conversation flow around me as I keep an eye on Kaida, smiling when Tiny joins us, tail wagging furiously. She points at a tree with a noise that sounds like her version of, what's that? Lemon, baby. A lemon tree. She must like the answer, because she plops down and starts playing with the low-hanging fruits. Past the railing and cliff, I can count more lights dotting the shoreline. Other villas, hotels, residences, parties. Other older brothers and unrequited crushes. Isola Bella and its thin isthmus are a little more than a dark, vague outline. No one is there at night. At least, no one who might require illumination. If it weren't for the occasional rustling of the foliage, I would barely be able to make it out. I sit on one of the many benches, Tiny curled at my feet. Perform undying gratitude for Kaida whenever she brings me her scavenged gifts. Little rocks, leaves, dry sticks. In the distance, a boat cuts through the starlit water, leaving a hum in its path. So pretty, I praise. Lucrezia is distributing lewdly rich slices of chocolate cake at the table, and I make a mental note to leave more room for dessert in the future. I swear, I tell Minami when I hear her coming to check on me, I'm not letting your firstborn eat dirt. Well, maybe a bit of dirt, but what's an immune system for, if not... I turn, meet a pair of dark eyes, and my heart stumbles. Chapter 9. Are you lost? I ask. It comes out acerbic and angry. But for once, I don't mind letting my temper slip.
Good night for stargazing,
Connor says as he joins me on the bench. He doesn't sound like the guy who essentially told me to fuck off 2 hours ago. Not as he distractedly ruffles Tiny's mop, head tipped up and eyes fixed above. The strong muscles of his neck meet the sharp curve of his jaw.
Which one is Zantares again?
I point at it, and he nods. His throat moves as he swallows. I feel suspended, unmoored. The stars are one end of the universe, the waves kissing the shore the other. And then the two of us, floating somewhere in the middle.
Is it still your favorite?
He asks quietly. I let my head fall back, too. There are no clouds covering the smattering of stars, no smog rising like a blackout curtain. It's breathtakingly easy to tease apart the constellations in this southern sky. Still makes my end of year wrap up. Yeah.
I can see why. Looks just like you said.
His lips twitch.
Glad I managed to get a good look before its inevitable implosion.
Connor knows how much the stars mean to me, because I told him. I explained to him that Dad taught me, that we'd go camping with his telescope and he'd teach me how to draw the shapes in the sky, that even after Dad was gone, the stars in the telescope were still there. I told Connor, and he listened, like he always did, saying very little, the slow rhythm of his breathing anchoring me through the phone. It always sounded the same, whether there were thousands of miles of ocean between us or just a handful of Austin streets. Connor would listen and sigh and never gave me the platitudes everyone else dished out so easily. Not your fault. You couldn't have prevented it. Only 12. Just lost your mother. Not your responsibility. Hearing that stuff only made the voices in my head louder. I never told Connor, but he had an instinct when it came to me. He knew that all I wanted was to not be alone. So he listened. And only once, late at night, a few weeks before putting an end to the calls, he said,
I wish I could bear this for you, Maya.
I believed him. Because I'm a fucking idiot. Looks even better here than from home, I say, blinking up at its bright, rusty color.
I'm glad.
Kaida gasps, delighted to hear Connor's voice, waddles our way as fireflies blink intermittently around her, opens her little fist in his direction.
Soil,
he says with a nod.
Of course.
She blinks, owlish, thrusts her chubby fingers at him.
No,
he says flatly.
I'm not going to accept gifts of soil, dead plant matter, or rocks. I will not pretend to eat them. We've been over this multiple times, Kaida.
Her round face splits in a toothy, charmed smile. No baby talk from Connor, just straight-faced adult interactions. He might respect her more than he does me. Childish brat still rings in my ears. Is it painful? I ask impulsively. Vengefully, too.
Is what?
I shrug. I don't know. Kaida, I guess. He shakes his head.
No, it's not. Why would it be?
If you and Minami had stayed together, then Kaida would be yours. He smiles.
That's not how meiosis works. You should have figured it out, since you're the smartest person I know.
I huff out a laugh. I can't be. It's been years, and I still haven't managed to figure you out.
That's because there's nothing to figure out, Maya.
Agree to disagree. I would love to know how you can go from being the most thoughtful person I've ever met to a raging asshole in no time. I would love to understand whether you're pretending not to care now or pretended to care for 3 years. Above all, and this might sound shallow, I'd love to know what the hell is going on here. A confused silence. I feel his stare and continue. Why does nearly every woman in this house seem to have some kind of connection with you? There's Minami, the historic ex, Avery, the other ex, Tamarin, the mysterious new entry, and then me, of course, the...
Don't,
he says, so sharp that my eyes let go of Antares to find his.
Don't put yourself in the same category as Minami, or Avery, or Tamarin. You do not belong there.
It's the verbal equivalent of a slap in the face. A deliberate one, I suspect. A few short years ago, the cruelty of his words would have sent me down a spiral of self-loathing and inadequacy. But I've been in therapy for too long to allow Connor Harkness, or anyone else, to make me feel inferior. He doesn't deserve my emotional turmoil, or my time. I stand from the bench. At the table, Axel is brandishing a half-empty bottle of an orange liquor that looks exactly like what I need right now. Lucrezia shakes her head, scowls, and he laughs. Maybe she could use some moral support. Keep an eye on Kaida, I tell Connor.
Where are you going?
Elsewhere. His large hand envelops my wrist.
Maya.
What?
I ask over my shoulder. I'd like to diversify my insult portfolio for the evening, and I have already sampled your offerings.
That's not what I... Fuck, Maya.
He sighs, rubs his eyes with his fingers, like I am the one who destroys his peace of mind, tugs me downward till we're sitting side by side again.
We used to be able to have conversations without provoking each other,
he says after a pause. Oh, I remember. Do you? A hollow laugh, barely exhaled.
Maya, this is happening.
What is?
You and I, here, together, for a week. After that, maybe you're going to be working for Sanchez in California. Maybe you'll take the MIT position. Either way, you'll no longer be in Europe. We'll meet again and again, and we'll need to find a way to coexist during occasions like this one. Because none of the people Eli surrounds himself with are stupid.
Across the garden, Axel is still arguing with Lucrezia, waving his bottle like a flag, somehow breaking the language barrier.
Almost none,
Connor amends. The long, amused look we exchange is like a well-beaten path, and brings me back to before. I'm still the same, Connor, I think. How changed are you?
What you overheard about Avery and me, I'm sorry, Maya. I can understand that it would be upsetting that someone you used to think you cared about, that I would come to your brother's wedding to be with someone else in front of you.
Laughter rises from the table. I feel heavy, but empty. They're very sure that you are perfect for each other, I say softly.
They?
Minami.
Minami just wants me to be paired up and happy.
And Sol? He snorts.
Sol hasn't had an original opinion since he met Minami.
Eli does too. And Tisha. He seems indifferent.
Thank God for Rue, who couldn't give less of a fuck.
I smile. He does too. Do you still like her? I ask after a minute.
I do. I like that she's made Eli happier than he's ever been. Mostly, I like that she doesn't give a shit about what I think of her.
God, she would love this answer. So are you going to sleep with her?
Rue!
I almost choke on my saliva. Avery! A pause. Or Tamron. It's none of my business, and I have no right to ask. But this is Connor, and I wish I could file a Freedom of Information Act request. He sighs, suddenly tired.
It doesn't matter, Maya. It doesn't matter if I sleep with Avery, with Lucrezia, or with that lemon tree over there. That's not going to affect the fact that I'm not going to sleep with you.
I wish he was trying to hurt me. But the way he says it is so devastatingly kind. It paralyzes me. You're getting a call, I say, pointing to the phone at his side. He reaches for it, but only to turn it face down.
It's been a long while. Can we move past what happened?
Nothing has happened between us. He made sure of it.
Precisely.
A deep breath.
I want the best for you.
And I want you. I forbid myself from saying. Instead, I study Kaida's bent head, the deep concentration with which she plays, and go with the truth. I don't know how to act around you. He laughs.
I take full responsibility for that. I should have known better than to let it all become so...
messy? Problematic?
Fucked up, I was gonna say.
Does it feel fucked up to you? Because to me it doesn't. It just feels... I swallow. Allow myself to continue. I missed you, Connor. Even in the dim lights, I see it. The flash in his eyes. Something that could be longing, or regret, or hunger. His lips part briefly, instinctively, and for a fraction of a moment, I'm sure he's going to admit that he missed me too. He's going to tell the truth, and I'll at least have that. I'm so certain I shiver, even surrounded by the hot night and the balmy breeze.
Maya.
He starts. Say it back. I will him. Come on, Connor. Say it back. Abruptly, he shakes his head.
You have goosebumps.
Dark eyes trail across my arm.
Let me go get you a jacket.
But he doesn't. He stands, clearly wanting to put some space between us, but stops when someone else simultaneously rises back at the table. It's Diego, who lifts a finger as if to propose a toast. Instead of speaking, however, he turns around and with a splattering, ear-grating sound, vomits the contents of his stomach onto the villa's manicured lawn.
The fuck?
Connor mutters. In the next 30 minutes, the other members of the wedding party follow suit. Chapter 10.
Gliel'avevo detto.
Lucrezia moans for the third time, rubbing her hands together nervously, reminding me of the flies feasting on the half-eaten dessert plates in the garden. According to the translation app I've been stealthily using, it means, I told him so. Dr. Cacciari, a dour, lanky man who could successfully serve as an international spokesperson for facial hair, pats her repeatedly on the back. His dark beard extends upward into a mustache and down to the breastbone to mingle with a tuft of equally black chest hairs that peek from the neck of his button-down. It's bushy, veined with gray, and fashionably groomed. I expect a hummingbird will be flying out of it any second.
Nulla di cui preoccuparsi,
he says. He drove up to the villa from one of the towns surrounding Taormina and didn't finish his rounds until close to midnight. In the meantime, someone must have blown out the lanterns in the garden, probably to hide the evidence of our idiocy.
Uno o due giorni al massimo.
Do not darken, my phone translates in real time. Spend one or two days at Massimo's. I click out of my useless app with an eye roll. In truth, Dr. Cacciari speaks English as well as I do, but stopped once he realized that if he talked with only Connor and Lucrezia, he could stick to Italian. I don't mind being excluded, especially after overhearing the phrase Staphylococcus aureus. It is, I believe, Latin for these fucking morons. So, Manami asks once he's gone, what are the bullet points, Hark? The three of us, official plague survivors, have retreated onto the living room couch. Everyone else is making out with a ceramic toilet.
Axel and Paul went to some kind of market. Axel, in his infinite wisdom, saw a bottle of something that looked like fresh arancello, that's limoncello, but made with orange rinds, and bought it.
He pinches the bridge of his nose. Pasture is rolling in his grave. Was the seller a trickster god? I ask. Did he throw in a pouch of magic beans?
One can only assume. Axel then proceeded to pour shots while we were waiting for someone to join us for dinner.
Hey, I say mildly. So now the puke-a-thon is my fault?
I've been referring to it as vomit fest in my head. But yeah.
His lips twitch.
Everything is your fault, trouble.
My heart stops, restarts. You should know better than to accept food or drink items from some dude who probably glued his balls to his thighs well into his 20s. She's got a point, Minami mutters. Axel is an idiot, but everyone else should have known better. How come you're okay? I ask her, curious. Didn't feel like having some weird orange concoction. What's your excuse, Hark? He shrugs.
It's food poisoning, that's all. They all need fluids and rest, and should be fine by tomorrow night.
At which point they'll be able to join us in the collective lighting of Axel's funeral pyre, I ask. Connor's smile is grim.
If he doesn't get stabbed overnight.
How do you think Rue and Eli would feel about holding a wedding and an entombment on the same day?
While everyone around wretches like a garden hose?
It's about time we redefine the term wedding shower. Hey, Minami interrupts, eyes narrow between us. Why do you two sound like you're enjoying yourselves? Connor and I exchange another look. His lips twitch, just like mine. Do you ever laugh just to avoid crying? I asked him a year and a half ago, after hitting a curb and messing up the brake system of the car I'd just finished paying off.
I laughed 3 times at my mom's funeral,
he told me.
Felt like absolute shite the whole time.
He remembers that conversation too. I can see it in the sudden softness of his expression.
Some people just like to see the world burn, Minami,
he says. What people?
Terrible people,
we say in unison, and our eyes lock and... So, a voice says from the staircase. Connor turns toward it first, but it's Minami who asks, Tamron, are you okay?
Yeah. My body rejecting every sip of water I take qualifies as okay, right?
She climbs down to the last step, long legs pale against the purple shorts of her pajamas.
Fucking Axel.
Connor sighs.
I've been thinking along those lines, too.
Her words fall with the same cadence as Connor's. Musical, rising, dropped G's.
Did the doctor happen to leave any drugs behind? I told him I wouldn't need it, but I'm in the grip of a very strong bout of regret.
He did. Pills. For the nausea.
Thank Christ.
Do you think I could have 3 or more? I watch her cock her hip against the railing. Her R's roll, sinuous. She looks freshly showered, skin scrubbed clean, and hair damp around her shoulders.
However many you want, Tam.
Unfortunately, I also had about a gallon of wine, which means that I'm still wasted and a bit woozy and...
I'm the closest to her, and when she wavers on her feet, looking as though she might fall on her face, I sprint out of my seat to put my arm around her waist. Connor and Minami get there about a second later. You sure you're doing okay? I ask. Her skin is hot, even through the jersey of her top.
Yes. No. Now that I think about it, I may have puked out a vital organ.
The drugs will help with that,
Connor says. Tamron nods, in no hurry to start back up the stairs.
You're so...
She starts, staring down at me. She must be nearly 6 feet. Taller even than Rue.
Maya, right?
You're not like Connor described. She's the first person I met who calls him Connor. Besides me, that is. Please, don't elaborate on that.
Why?
Can't be flattering. She laughs like she's highly familiar with the brand of insults Connor likes to deliver.
Eli's little sister has all the charm and maturity of a boy getting his first newspaper route. Did one nice thing for her, and she latched onto me like I'm a teat that yields chocolate milk. No good deed left unpunished.
You're very pretty, she tells me, which is like getting hit with a piñata stick over the head. Clearly, no ill is intended, but there's something patronizing about being called pretty by someone who looks like she came straight out of Instagram. Let's get you to bed, I say with my steadiest smile, and I'm not sure how it happens that her arm slips around my shoulders for support. From up close, she's not as young as I originally thought.
I can take you to bed, Tam,
Connor tells her.
Oh, I know. You've done it plenty of times,
she winks at him.
But I'm hanging out with my new friend, Maya. So what's it like being an enfant prodige?
There's a lump in my throat. I guess I wouldn't know, since I'm neither.
Nonsense. Everywhere I stumble, someone's bragging about how smart you are.
It's heartwarming how much they all love you. We climb up. Minami stays downstairs, but Connor trails behind us. Honestly, there's no reason for me to be here. He could easily carry Tamarin to wherever she'll sleep.
I think it's brilliant, being so young and already doing great things, she says. When I was your age, I knew sod all.
I'm sure that's not true.
Oh, it is. I made some shite choices. My email was Cunt Goddess Tam, and I used it proudly on job applications.
I laugh. Did you get any offers?
Of course. The email, specifically, made me a very desirable co-worker for a certain segment of the population. Not one that I wanted to work with. Oh, here, on the right. That's my room.
She turns around, beams at Connor, and holds her hand out to him.
Tell me more about those drugs.
He lets a few pills drop in her palm without touching it.
No more than one every 6 hours, cunt goddess.
Thank you for addressing me by my preferred title.
She turns to me.
Maya, did you know that he took 3 calls during dinner? You cannot allow him to keep working for the entire holiday.
I doubt it's within my powers to stop him.
We'll figure out something.
You'll figure something out.
We are.
Connor grumbles.
In an active deal phase that requires finalizing.
Tamarin interrupts him with a playful wave of her hand.
Yes, yes, the markets, the country's GDP.
Holding onto the wall, she lifts on her toes to press a kiss against his cheek.
Do you have time to tuck me in?
Connor nods, no hesitation.
Good night, Maya,
she tells me before disappearing with him past the door. I'm left alone in the deserted hallway, hollow-boned, wondering how the fuck I'm supposed to look away from this. Remembering a time when I pulled Connor inside my room. Chapter 11. 3 years, 2 months, 3 weeks earlier. Edinburgh, Scotland.
What are you doing here?
I half intended for the question to sound confrontational. How the hell did you find out where I live and teletransport yourself into my kitchen, you psycho? Unfortunately, it comes out breathless, and maybe a little intrigued. From their perch against the windowsill, Georgia and Alfie study me closely, loath to miss a single beat of this show.
I know. I know.
Connor puts his hands up, palms open.
I said I'd be arriving tomorrow, but after your text, I couldn't wait.
He smiles, lopsided, and I wonder if he's had plastic surgery. Botox. Facelift. The thing where they suck fat out of your cheeks. Not because his features have changed, but because he looks young. Not young, young. Not he could sit next to me at a lecture and I wouldn't bat an eye, young. Connor is obviously a man, and the campus reality in which I move is made up of boys. He must be around my brother's age. 34? 35? But while I was growing up, Eli and his friends, with their adult problems and adult lifestyles and adult conversations, always seemed ancient to me. Antediluvian. Boring. Now that I am an adult too, Connor Harkness just feels like a peer. And he's here. You couldn't wait, I repeat, skeptical.
I told you.
He scans my face with complete, undiluted attention. You told me?
Last summer, at the Isle of Harris.
Come on, his gaze communicates. Keep up. Okay, last summer I did go to the Isle of Harris, but how does he...
You were there at the same time as we were.
Alfie asks. It was a couple's vacation. Georgia and Anthony, Rose and Kenna, me and Alfie. Less than a year out, none of the couples have survived. I wonder why.
Were you there too?
Connor asks Alfie with an imperceptible, distracted glance at him.
One night, Maya and I met at the bar. I asked her if I could buy her a drink. Remember what you told me?
I shake my head, dazed.
that you were in a relationship, and I was devastated. But I asked if your boyfriend was ever foolish enough to let you go, that you let me know, because I'd come knock at your door. And I'm grateful that you did, love.
Love?
You never told me that this happened,
Alfie says, failing not to sound petulant. He's used to being the hot guy in the room, but I'm struggling to reconcile how juvenile and shrunken he looks compared to Hark. How utterly easy to ignore. Of course I didn't tell him, because none of this ever happened. It was just a, text, I tell Connor. You didn't need to come here. His chin dips in a self-deprecating gesture that's so damn charming, it has to be rehearsed. If he didn't spend his adolescence practicing it in front of a full-body mirror, I will be shaving my head bald and eating my hair strand by strand.
It was my chance. Plus, I was in the area.
An Edinburgh?
Georgia asks, sounding on the verge of moaning. Aw, how sweet.
Close. Near Kilkenny.
In Ireland? Did he fly in from...
For work?
Alfie asks, strained. I doubt he is jealous, but he could be envious, or understandably distrustful of an older man hanging around a recently unteenaged ex. If a friend of mine suddenly revealed a surprise suitor, especially one wearing tailored slacks that looked like he was born in them, especially an attractive one who oozes fuck you levels of generational wealth, I would worry too. Alfie and Georgia have no clue that Connor is my brother's closest friend. And I don't think I will communicate it to them.
I was in Ireland for a private matter. My family has an estate there, and my presence was required.
George's eyes widen. Is everything all right?
My father is ill.
She gasps. I'm so sorry.
You should be, as it appears that he'll pull through. The devil really does look after his own.
Connor's lips curve upward. He is disgustingly handsome.
One day he'll buy the farm and the world will become a better place. Lamentably, that is not today.
Alfie clears his throat.
I'm surprised you visited. It doesn't sound like you two get along. My father doesn't get along with people. He buys them. And it wasn't him that I was visiting, but my stepmother. Wonderful woman.
He walks closer to me, winks, and I choke on my tongue.
I'm going to my hotel now,
he adds. His tone is at once intimate and loud enough for the others to hear.
But I'll be around, for however long you'd like me to be.
Positive thought. Maybe the deep crimson of my cheeks will conceal the red rim of my eyes. Thank you, I croak. He bends down to press a cool, dry kiss over my cheek, cupping the back of my head. It's just his fingertips, and I could easily free myself, but he smells good. Clean. Soap mixed with expensive fabric, mixed with a faint trace of fresh sweat, probably from the plane ride. Pleasant.
Just one more second,
he murmurs against my ear. Only for me.
Don't forget to breathe, Maya.
The thing is, I know exactly what he's doing, and it's idiotic. But also kind of amazing. Because when he straightens, my eyes skitter to Alfie's arm, which is wrapped all the way around George's neck. George's hip, likewise, is leaning half against Alfie's crotch. In the past year, I made it very clear to Alfie that whenever he came over, there would be no PDA in shared areas to avoid making Georgia uncomfortable in her living space. Clearly, this is a courtesy that they don't plan on returning. I follow Connor's advice and breathe, feeling my anger rise up again, and with it, a touch of recklessness that... Fuck it. We ball. Actually, I glance up at Connor, surprised by how firm I sound. There's no reason for you to leave. Why don't you just spend the night? I sleep in a twin bed. I hadn't forgotten. Not exactly. I may, however, have neglected to consider its implications when I impulsively invited Connor to stay. I pull him in and close the door behind me, leaning against it. Then I wait for him to turn around and for our gazes to lock. At which point, we laugh. Silently. It's mostly his shoulder, shaking, and me biting into the heel of my hand as I come to terms with whatever the fuck just happened. Until Connor hears something and lifts his finger. It's Alfie and Georgia walking past my door to her room. Connor moves closer, palms above both my shoulders, boxing me in. Eyes never leaving mine, he pushes once, forcefully. The door shakes in the hinges, and I frown, unable to figure out what he's up to. Until he does it again. And again. And again. Building a rhythm that... Oh my God, I mouth. My shock makes him smile. When Alfie's and George's voices suddenly fall to whispers, his eyebrow lifts. There's the sound of another door being slammed shut, and with one last energetic push, the noisiest so far, Connor steps away from me. I shake my head, baffled by the conniving, amusing, petty plans this man seems to have put in place in the last 3 hours, and ask in my most conversational tone, "Are you out of your mind?" He listens for more noises. When he's satisfied that the others are not eavesdropping, he starts glancing around my room. With him in it, it looks about as big as the eye of a needle.
"Probably, but that's unrelated to my presence here."
"I cannot believe you came. I haven't seen you in...
"Yeah, I tried to figure it out on the plane."
Connor Harkness is here, inspecting the desk where I fall asleep when I play Final Fantasy for too long, running a finger pad down the cracked spine of my old astrochemistry textbook.
"I think Eli invited me to your high school graduation."
"Oh, did you go?"
"Nope."
"Why?" He gives me a straight look.
"I'd rather shit in my hands and clap than go to the graduation of some teenager I barely know."
Laughter. Real laughter pours out of me for the first time in days. It's snorted out and phlegmy, probably disgusting, but Connor seems charmed, even as his eyes roam my desk and stumble on the "birth control" post-it that I put up to avoid forgetting my pills. He nods to himself, faintly discomposed. "Told you, not 13.
"Still not sure about that."
"I'm an adult. I go to school in a different country. I have a credit card. I own sex toys." I impulsively open my bedside drawer and show him my stash, only slightly regretting it when I remember the giant dragon dildo Rose gave me as a birthday present. Connor takes it in, blinks several times.
"Not 13.
He acquiesces with a nod, moving to study the hoard of stationery items that live on my desk. "Is this creepy?" I ask. "That you're here, I mean. It doesn't feel like it, but should it?"
"The fact that I'm in your room? A little, yeah. In my defense, though, that was your call, not part of my plan."
"What was your plan?"
"Mostly deferring to you."
"Really? Because you kind of took charge with the whole fake relationship thing." He winces.
"Yeah, that was impulsive. And pure fucking spite."
I tilt my head, and he continues.
"Those two were Velcroed together from the second I got here. They had no idea where you were or why you were out this late. They were not worried that you weren't answering your phone. And then I saw your face when you came in and..."
His expression is fascinating. A mix of tightly leashed control, utter chaos, and thirst for vengeance.
"You know, I may have anger issues too."
Laughter bubbles out of me. "You don't say."
"But now that your friends, and I use the term loosely, think that there is someone else in your life, you have options."
"Such as?"
"If you need a break from them, you could spend the next few nights at my hotel. I'm leaving tomorrow morning, so the room would be all yours. But they won't know that.
I nod. Honestly, it's not the worst idea.
Why did you move to Scotland for college anyway?
He asks, studying the Texas Longhorns postcard on my wall. He seems more interested in looking at the room decor than at me. Same reason you moved to the U.S., probably.
You were a rower and got recruited by an Ivy.
I laugh. I didn't know that about him, but I can see it. I totally can. Wide back, defined arms, strong legs. No. To escape my annoying family.
Ah.
He nods, then stares at my bed for a suspicious length of time. So long, I tense. Maybe I shouldn't have shown a virtual stranger my sex toys. Fair warning, I say coldly. I never put out the first time someone flies in from another country to save me from my terrible life choices. He blinks, confused. The way you were ogling my bed, I figured that maybe you were wondering. He scoffs.
I was wondering, but only whether the second part of your bed pulls out.
The what?
You really sleep there? Every night?
Yeah, I frown. Why are you looking at it like that?
Just admiring its unique narrowness.
He glances up.
One would figure that not having a headboard would buy you some room, and yet...
Now listen, Mr. Billionaire.
Not a billionaire. Not even on the best trading day. Not even close.
Aw, I like that.
That I have less money than you think?
No, that you took the word billionaire as the insult it was meant to be. He sighs, failing to conceal a smile, points at a section on the wall that's free of furniture, a couple of feet from my bed.
Okay if I take that spot?
For what?
To spend the night.
He must interpret my befuddlement as a yes, because he drops to the floor and sits against the wall. His long, muscular legs stretch in front of him, crossed at the ankle.
I'll stay a couple of hours, then noisily sneak out. You have a ring camera, right?
Yeah? He closes his eyes and tilts his head back, as if preparing to sleep. It's hard to look away from him. There is something about the prominence and position of his cheekbones, the sculpted line of his neck, the way it curves into broad shoulders that makes me want to measure, analyze, understand.
I'll make sure to look disheveled then.
An incredulous sound bubbles out of me. I take a seat on the edge of my mattress, burying my fingers in the coverlets. You couldn't be bothered to come to my high school graduation, and now you're here. He opens one eye.
You didn't need me at your graduation.
That's not what I meant. Why did you come, Connor? The second eye opens too. After a too long pause, he says,
Because I've been there.
I frown. Where?
Staying friends with an ex. Watching them move on too quickly. My ex was classy about it. The transition was smooth. But it still sucked. Yours isn't bothering with any of that. So I figured you might want external support.
He's talking about Minami, I think. And in hindsight, looking at him with fresh eyes? Yeah, he probably could have pulled her. Just a little bit. I wish I knew more about that whole thing. For the first time in my life, I wish I'd paid better attention to my brother's friend's drama digest. You know, I say, dumbfounded, lying down on the bed, still fully dressed. This might be the nicest thing anyone has ever done for me. I meant to convey gratitude. His snort, though, is dismissive.
It's not.
I scowl. Maybe it is. You don't know that.
Maya, your brother changed the trajectory of his life to take care of you.
Good point. Being reminded of it makes my insides twist. Still, sometimes I wonder if he hates me. A long, measuring stare.
Every choice Eli has made in the last decade was with your well-being in mind.
That doesn't mean that he doesn't hate me.
He had to rebuild his life for you. And I'm certain that comes with a healthy dose of resentment. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't love you more than anything in the world.
He's so matter-of-fact. I wish I felt a tenth as calm as he does about my relationship with my brother. I should call him more often. When I was home for the summer, I actually had fun hanging out with him. Sometimes I'm embarrassed by how badly I used to act out. He angles his head toward me, amused.
You were a genius-level IQ girl who lost her parents suddenly and traumatically. Believe me, he doesn't blame you for any of it.
How do you even know about my IQ?
You're finishing a physics degree with honors at 20 and have been accepted to 500,000 graduate programs with full funding. I inferred.
Okay, well, you also knew about the Isle of Harris vacation. Did you infer that?
Sadly, that does enter creepy territory.
You stalked my Instagram, didn't you? He glares.
I am an adult man.
I let out a breathy giggle, but he taps at his phone and hands it over, showing me a thread of texts between Eli, Sol, Manami, and Connor, the four founding members of Harkness. I didn't know people your age had group chats.
Do fuck off, Maya.
I smile at his mild tone. It's clear that he searched the chat for the word Maya and found dozens of texts from Eli about me. Not personal stuff that I'd be embarrassed to realize he shared, but big picture news about my life. Mostly what I tell him when he messages me every few months, asking whether everything's going okay at school. The paper I worked on as a research assistant, and how it got published with me in the author lineup. My internship. Vacation photos I sent as proof of life.
She's fantastic.
He wrote in one text.
I really think she'll be one of the best physicists of her generation, headed for great things.
He clearly keeps track of stuff, I say, a little choked.
He's proud of you, more than of anything he's achieved on his own, I'd hazard.
I keep scrolling. Manami is usually the only one who replies to texts about me, which doesn't surprise me, since I assume that these updates may be mostly for her. She was all